Hey, what's going on, my qualifiers? Welcome to another episode of Unqualified News with your host, M. Mauricio. That is me. I bring you guys a couple articles on this episode. A couple things that have been on my mind that I've been wanting to bring up. So here they are. There's an article in here from businessinsider.com, and it's talking about the Haitian president that was just assassinated in Haiti. A bunch of murderers went into his house and just filled him with bullets in front of his wife. That happened. That happened. That's real life. There's another article here from KTLA 5, and it's talking about free lunch for every child in California. Free lunch. So I don't know if you in the past were part of that lunch program when you were younger, and they gave you those little tickets, you know, the dark one and the light one. The dark one was breakfast, right? And then the light one was lunch, I think. That will be no more. All children will be able to get free lunch. So nobody has to feel broke. Nobody has to feel poor. You know what I'm saying? That's beautiful. I love that. Then I have an article from routers.com talking about Cuba. What is going on with Cuba? What's going on with Cuba is they cut out their internet. They don't talk about this in this article that I have, but that's what's happening in Cuba. Cut their internet off so they don't communicate with anybody. And if you've been living in the United States for whatever time, you already know Cuba is not, you know what I mean? They're not on the best of list of us, you know, for us. So that's there. I don't know. I don't know what's happening there. I don't know a lot of information, but I will find out. Also here, I have news from Bitcoin.com. And we're talking about El Salvador. And, you know, recently they adopted Bitcoin. And this article is actually talking about a Colón dollar. So it's something that Nayib Bukele is trying to bring out. It sounds like corruption to me. But you tell me, you know? Widow of Haiti's assassinated president returns to the country wearing her arm in a sling and a bulletproof vest. All right, my qualifiers, this one comes from businessinsider.com by Sophia Ankle. Martine Moise, the wife of Haiti's assassinated president, returned to the Caribbean nation on Saturday after receiving medical treatment in Florida. The widow was photographed arriving at Port-au-Prince Airport with bodyguards, wearing an arm sling and a bulletproof vest. She was greeted by Haiti's interim prime minister, Claude Joseph, and other top officials. Moise was with her husband, Jovenel Moise, on July 7th when a group of assassins broke into their private residence and killed him. She survived the attack but had to be flown to a hospital in Miami, Florida for treatment. In a tweet, a Haitian official said Moise had returned to the country to prepare for her husband's funeral. Her arrival was unannounced and surprised many in the impoverished country of more than 11 million people who are still reeling from the assassination. Last week, Moise spoke from her hospital bed for the first time, saying in a voice message posted on Twitter that the attack happened so quickly her husband was unable to say a single word. In a blink of an eye, the mercenaries entered my house and riddled my husband with bullets, Moise said, according to the BBC. Earlier this week, she tweeted, "The pain will never pass." It is still unclear who exactly was behind the attack. Haitian police previously pointed to what it said was a group of assassins that includes 26 Colombians and 2 Haitian Americans. 18 of those Colombians were detained, 3 were killed by police, and 5 were still on the run, police said, according to Reuters. This week, police took Jovenel Moises, chief of security, into custody, a decision that came from above, CNN reported. Jovenel Moises' funeral is expected to happen next week. And there you go, my qualifiers. That's businessinsider.com on the assassination of the Haitian president. Damn. I don't even know. I don't know enough about this, but I had to put this up because I need to look into it. I'm trying to figure out why he was assassinated. There has to be a reason. First thing I think about Haiti is very, very poor country, right? So usually these third world countries that are very, very poor, there's a lot of corruption in government because they're taking the money, you know, from the people. So This could be one of those situations where maybe this president was looking out for his pocket more so. But you never know. Or maybe this could be another situation like Myanmar, where, you know, there's a bunch of individuals trying to take over the government. California launches largest free school lunch program in U.S., with all students having option to eat meals for free. This one comes from KTLA 5 by the Associated Press. When classrooms in California reopen for the fall term, all 6.2 million public school students will have the option to eat school meals for free, regardless of their family's income. The undertaking, made possible by an unexpected budget surplus, will be the largest free student lunch program in the country. School officials, lawmakers, anti-hunger organizations, and parents are applauding it as a pioneering way to prevent the stigma of accepting free lunches and feed more hungry children. This is so historic. It's beyond life-changing, said Aaron Primer, director of food services for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District of California's Central Coast. Several U.S. cities, including New York, Boston, and Chicago, already offer free school meals for all. But until recently, statewide universal meal programs were considered too costly and unrealistic. California became the first state to adopt a universal program late last month, and Maine followed shortly after with a similar plan. "We've completely leveled the playing field when it comes to school food," Primer said. The extra funding will also allow her to offer tastier, better quality foods such as fresh bread, produce, and cheese from local producers, she said. Under federal rules, a family of four must make less than $34,000 a year to qualify for free meals and $48,000 to qualify for reduced-priced meals. The caps shift annually but are based on federal poverty measures that don't take into account the high cost of living and taxes in California. So it's just for the most poor families, and not even all of them, because some people failed to sign up or were fearful to sign up, said Kat Taylor, a philanthropist and co-founder of the Center for Eco-Literacy and the Tomcat Ranch that backed California's plan. About 60% of California students qualify, but experts say the number of children who need food assistance is much higher in a state with vast income inequality. Communities of color are disproportionately affected, and immigrant communities in particular are fearful of applying because of detailed forms that ask intrusive questions such as their family income, social security number, and children's immigration status. Schools reported a declining percentage of families applying for free and reduced price meals during the Trump administration, which attempted to tighten immigration policies and public benefits. Like school officials statewide, Primer has countless tales of children who struggled to pay for school meals or were too ashamed to eat for free. There was a child whose mother called Primer distraught because she made a few hundred dollars too much to qualify. The father, who is in the country illegally and feared that filling out the free meal application could get him deported, and constant cases of high schoolers not wanting friends to know they need free food, so they skip eating. When the pandemic hit, it changed everything, including how school meals were served, and provided an impetus for the universal program, which had bipartisan unanimous support. Lawmakers previously had only pursued targeted bills such as easing school lunch debt. After schools shut in March 2020, many transformed their parking lots into pickup sites, and federal funding allowed schools to offer meals to anyone. There were no applications, qualifications, and no questions asked. The massive turnout showed how much families rely on the meals. The Los Angeles Unified School District, the state's largest with 600,000 students, handed out upward to 400,000 meals a day, said spokeswoman Shannon Harbor. San Luis Coastal, with 7,500 students, gave out 30,000 meals a week at the height of the pandemic, nearly triple the number before. The district includes the wealthy city of San Luis Obispo and lower-income areas. "I thought it was a pipe dream for a long time," said Senator Nancy Skinner, a longtime advocate for universal free meals. Backed by over 200 organizations in a coalition called School Meals for All, Skinner and other lawmakers pushed for funding in the state budget, seizing the momentum at a time when California is flush with cash. The $262 billion budget provides $54 million for the coming school year, supplementing funding from the Biden administration through June 2022. After that, California will spend $650 million annually. "If you're a hungry child, you're not going to learn well," said Skinner, a Democrat representing Berkeley. "Why should we have to go to a bureaucratic hassle to get a kid fed when we could just have universal meals?" Senate Education Committee Republicans supported the plan as a way to help families struggling with California's high cost of living. Senator Brian Dow, a Republican from a largely rural area of Northern California, said he had watched kids at his children's school steal leftover food when cafeteria workers weren't looking. For a lot of them, that was their dinner, and they were sneaking it off or taking it off someone's plate when they didn't finish it, said Dow. "Schools rarely turn hungry kids away, but for children who didn't qualify and needed lunch, their parents were billed and many racked up huge debts. In recent years, some schools threatened to not let students graduate middle or high school until lunch debts were paid, or stamp the hands of students who owed money," said Jessica Bartholow, chief of staff for Skinner, who previously was an anti-hunger advocate. "Some schools would hire debt collectors to hound parents, but at the end of the year, schools have to use general fund dollars to pay off lunch program debts," she said. For Tina Self, a mother of three, avoiding the cost of $3 school lunches every day will be an enormous relief. "It might seem like a little bit, but it helps a lot," said Self, who lives in San Luis Obispo, where a gallon of gas can cost just shy of $5 a gallon, and rent is crazy. "Lucky for us, we both have a job and we have two running cars," she said of herself and her husband, "but we're barely making it as it is." Tony Walden, associate superintendent of the West Contra Costa Unified School, says it's about time lunches were free. "Just like you need to give students textbooks and a computer, there are certain things you need to do, and this is one of them," Wold said. And there you have it, my qualifiers. That's from KTLA 5, local news to me here in Los Angeles. So I had to bring it to you guys. And it has to do with schools. And that's on top of my head now. You know, I have a son. He just turned 2. But soon he will be going to school. And, you know, these type of news stick out to me. I was also one of those students that had those little tickets, you know, the lunch program. I was one of those kids. I was one of those kids that I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want people to know that I was getting that free lunch, you know. And then at one point in time, like, I guess it was okay because there were so many, I guess, poor kids like me that had free lunches. So we all kind of, you know, it was okay. There was so many people doing it, so it became fine. But I remember when I was younger, there was a point in time that there was a stigma to getting those free lunches. You know, if you weren't eating those hot Cheetos and you weren't paying for that Pizza Hut or whatnot, you know, you were the poor kid, you know? That's gonna take away a lot of bullying during lunchtime, you know, because, you know, you knew who the poor kids were. And something that stuck out is it seems like New York, Chicago had already implemented this program that we're kind of jumping on, but because California is such large, we're going to be the largest now. We're going to be the largest to give free meals to students, and that's awesome. I love that. Cuba, gripped by unrest, battles highest COVID caseload in the Americas, by Sarah Marsh. And this one comes from Reuters.com. Havana, Cuba, which kept coronavirus infections low last year, now has the highest rate of contagion per capita in Latin America. That has strained its healthcare sector and helped stoke rare protests that have roiled the communist-run island. The Caribbean nation of 11 million people reported nearly 4,000 confirmed cases per million residents over the last week, 9 times more than the world average and more than any other country in the Americas for its size. The outbreak, fueled by the arrival of the more contagious Delta variant, first identified in India, has pushed hospitals at the virus epicenter in the province of Matanzas to the brink. State media has shown rare images of patients in beds, in corridors, and doctors complaining of lack of oxygen, ventilators, and medicines. Cuba's handling of the pandemic was one of the issues that propelled thousands to take to the streets nationwide last Sunday in unprecedented anti-government demonstrations in a country where public spaces are tightly controlled. Demonstrators also protested shortages of food and medicines and curbs on civil liberties. Cuba is not alone in struggling under new waves of the pandemic, but the political implications of such a crisis are greater in a country where healthcare is considered one of the pillars of legitimacy of its revolutionary one-party system. Moreover, the outbreak and subsequent lockdown and reduction in numbers of flights has taxed an already bankrupt economy where many work in tourism and others rely on travelers to bring in remittances and goods, including medicine. The government has consistently made the case that one of the main accomplishments of the revolution is its world-class medical sector, said Cuban-American historian Daniel Rodriguez, author of a book on medical politics in post-independence Havana. Rodriguez said the exacerbation of food and medicine shortages over the past year due to the pandemic-related economy crisis had already broken Cuba's social pact. When the pandemic began spiraling out of control a couple of weeks ago, it appeared increasingly the revolutionary government was no longer able to protect Cuban lives. And the result was an extraordinary repudiation of the revolution itself. Cuba's government has blamed the demonstrations on U.S. finance counter-revolutionaries exploiting hardships caused by decades-old U.S. sanctions tightened during the pandemic. Several countries and non-government organizations, including Oxfam, called on Washington to lift sanctions this week. On Saturday, authorities organized pro-government rallies across the island, attended by thousands. But many Cubans have aimed their anger at their own government, handling of the economy and the pandemic. "We are hungry. There's nothing at the moment, not even medicine," said Eileen Sardinha, 33, at a protest in Havana. Some critics complain that authorities appear to have ample transport to deploy security forces to quell protests and bus state workers to rallies, while lacking ambulances. To be sure, Cuba has had some pandemic successes, notably the development of 5 vaccine candidates, 2 of which have proven to have efficacy of more than 90%, according to the preliminary Cuban data. Thanks to one of the highest numbers of doctors per capita rates in the world, it was also able to send its white coat army to help other countries and lately to reinforce hospitals in Matanzas. Moreover, cumulative cases per capita are still below the global average, while deaths per capita, though rising, are still just a third of the global average, a fact Cuba credits to its experimental treatments and its free universal health care. However, with cases now rising fast, a deepening of Cuba's economic crisis has prevented officials from imposing stricter lockdowns, with many Cubans having to stand in lines for hours to get scarce goods. And so far, only some 2 million people, less than a fifth of the population, are fully vaccinated. Brazilian-based Cuban virologist Almicar Perez Riverol said that premature triumphal statements from state media about the Cuban vaccine candidate and rallies like Saturday's may have also led to people lowering their guard, creating a breeding ground for cases to soar. The country has an ambitious aims to have fully vaccinated 70% of the population by September. But Perez Riverol warned that in the next few weeks, COVID-19 deaths will likely continue to rise as they lagged the surge in cases. "You go out onto the street to buy food and someone says to you, 'Do you know who else died?'" said Livia Ortega, 44, a worker in a private cafeteria in Matanzas City, closed due to pandemic and shortages of products. "The doctors are making a big effort to save lives every day, but medicine and supplies are lacking." And that's from routers.com, my qualifiers. That has to do with Cuba and what's happening in Cuba right now. And I brought this one up. I searched Cuba because I wanted to talk about Cuba. Sunday, I was in Los Angeles. There's a place called Echo Park, some Ducks Park, pretty famous. And there was a giant demonstration slash protest slash whatever you want to call it of Cubans. I was there with my son, and we were driving. We were there, but as we were driving away, I guess it started gathering. And what's pretty crazy is that even as I was driving past there was a lot of traffic. I was honking my horn, you know, from far away. I'm not gonna lie. From far away, I thought it was something to do with Puerto Rico. You know what I mean? The flag kind of looked similar, but I got closer and I saw that communist star on that flag, baby. So I knew it was Cuba. So I started honking and, you know, supporting. I didn't know why I was supporting, but I just know I gotta support my peoples, you know? I looked it up, and what's happening is, it wasn't mentioned on this article, but Cuba has basically shut down their internet. They don't have internet, so they're not able to communicate with anybody outside of that country. And I also found out that somehow, some way, here in America, we have control over their internet. So somehow we are able to turn on their internet like a light switch. I don't know much about it, but that's what I've heard. Yeah, that's what's going on in Cuba right now. So they're being silenced. I mean, you know, what's new, right? But what this article mainly talks about is the soaring cases of COVID. And I think they might have tried to silence a lot of the country, maybe because they were being too vocal about the high number of cases rising, you know? Report claims Nayib Bukele's regime may issue a Salvadorian stablecoin. This one is from news.bitcoin.com by Jamie Redman. There's lots of debate going on concerning a report published by the regional news outlet El Faro. The investigation claims the Salvadorian president Nayib Bukele and his regime plans to issue a stablecoin. The El Faro report references videos that show the president's brothers discussing the stablecoin dubbed Colon Dollar. The report from El Faro does note a spokesperson from the Bukele regime says the stablecoin plans were scrapped, but sources familiar with the matter told El Faro they disagree. This is because it has been said that meetings about the Colon Dollar are still continuing and happened after Nayib Bukele passed the new Bitcoin tender law. El Faro has a copy of several videos that add up to more than 2 hours of virtual meetings in which different negotiations appear with delegates from at least 5 technology companies and where the Bukele brothers are protagonists. The reporters Sergio Arruz, Nelson Rauda, and Roman Gracier wrote. El Faro also obtained documents in which the action plan proposed by foreign companies to leverage the implementation of a new financial system and the new currency is registered. The report adds, in a discussion on Twitter, the owner of the Twitter account tied to the bustling Bitcoin beach community at Playa El Zonte believes the stablecoin idea was scrapped. The statement was in response to an individual from El Salvador that said the stablecoin idea reminded them of the petrol from Venezuela. From my understanding, they were considering going this route, which would have been very concerning, but chose to embrace Bitcoin instead. The Twitter account at Bitcoin Beach tweeted, from what I am hearing, this is no longer a consideration. They gave up control to instead embrace an open protocol, the account added. However, another individual disagreed with the Bitcoin Beach account and believes otherwise. The person said that several of his Salvadorian correspondents corroborated the El Faro article, but he could not vouch for their accuracy. The El Faro source notes that the stablecoin called the Colon Dollar may be introduced by the end of the year. Financial reporter Frances Coppola believes she predicted the creation of a Salvadorian stablecoin in a tweet she wrote in June 9, 2021. I reckon that's what he will do. It won't be backed with actual USD. It will be backed with the USD equivalent stablecoin, Coppola said at one time. In addition to people disliking the idea that Nayib Bukele's regime may be creating stablecoin, Bitcoiners, as well as citizens of El Salvador, have taken issue with Bukele's recent vaccine mandates. A great number of Salvadorians said they were displeased with Bukele's vaccine mandates and said the Salvadorian population does not want these COVID-19 vaccines. One individual tweeted to Bukele and said, "The Bitcoin community does not support you in this." Furthermore, the regional source that claims the stablecoin creation is still a go noted that Bukele's brothers were in charge of the concept and that Colon Dollar would be integrated with the government wallet dubbed Chivo. In addition to the video meetings, the sources also detail that members of the Bukele's regime met with blockchain teams from WizGrid, Algorand, and Cardano. So there it is. That's from Bitcoin.com, the news section. And there you go. If you heard my last episode, I knew there was something to this guy. Nayib Bukele looks like such a bad guy. He's probably pretty cool, but come on. You know, definitely, like I've mentioned before, these leaders from these Latin American countries are always, always trying to enrich themselves. Always. These governments are extremely corrupt. And I mean, I know the U.S. government's corrupt too, I know, but there's so many more checks and balances here in the U.S. than there is in other countries, okay? So this already right here, I already knew there was a red flag. When I heard El Salvador putting Bitcoin into their economy, I already knew somebody was gonna get rich. I already knew one person was gonna get really rich, and it seems like it's gonna be the Bukele brothers, the Bukele family. So, I don't know. I don't know what to say about this one. I just wanted to take a quick second to thank you guys. Thank you, my qualifiers. And maybe I shouldn't say guys, you know, because times like this, I don't want to trigger anybody. Just kidding. But yeah, I don't really like saying guys. So maybe I should say guys and gals. I appreciate you guys and gals. Even that one's kind of off, but sorry. Just really, thank you. I appreciate you listening in. I know I say it every time, I sound like a broken record, but I gotta remain consistent. I know that. I know that. I understand that. And for all you that are listening right now, this far into my episode, I truly appreciate it. I know you. I do this for you guys. Trust me. When I'm not doing these episodes, when I'm not recording them, and I'm not editing them or researching them, I'm thinking about them. Trust me. I'm always thinking about unqualified news, and I'm always thinking about my qualifiers. If you know me day to day, I'm basically unqualified news when I'm talking. You know, I'm always talking about stuff like this. It's just been kind of tough to be consistent lately, but just recently I moved, just this past month, so I'm finally settled into my new place. I'm living now in downtown LA. Right in the middle, basically, of downtown LA. It's an experience. Lately, I've been in the outskirts of LA, and now in downtown LA, it's dirty, it's bummy. I've seen so many fucking things that I've never seen in my life already. For the first time ever, I saw somebody shooting up heroin. Insane. On my way to work, I'm walking, and I look to my left, and there's some guy there just, you know, I'm walking the streets like 4 in the morning to get to my car, you know, to go to work. And some guy there shooting up, 4 in the morning. And insane. I get back, I get out of work 2:30, get home at 3, and there I'm walking up the street again, and there's the guy laid out on the floor on a futon, and it looks like somebody even put a blanket over him because he's over there just chilling, man. There's so much to talk about when it comes to that. I'd never seen that. I've always heard that the drug problem here in America has been really bad, especially when it comes to heroin. Seems to be the top killer. In all my 33 years of life, I've never seen that. So to see that, it's still in the back of my mind, heavy. And I don't know what to do about it, you know? So I thought I'd bring it up to you guys. But again, thank you. Appreciate you guys. I'm working on some new things for Unqualified News, you know? I want to bring in some pretty cool interviews. I want to be able to interview people that are in a profession that I find interesting. But again, I got to be consistent. I can't go around asking people for interviews when they see my episodes and I have, you know, one a month, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes 3 a month. It's just, I need more consistency. Love you guys and thank you. Peace.